Today I want to talk about Jung's personality theory and how he evolved several concepts that you are very familiar with, extroversion, introversion, which I already talked about, and his types that you can hopefully at the end of this be a little more clear whether you are a thinking type or a feeling type or an intuitive type or a sensation type. Now, right off, I want to say sensation doesn't mean that you're sensational. It means that you're practical. I will start by defining these, and then I want to have you make a stab at what you think you are in terms of your attitude and talk in small groups the way we do in the Bible study. And I'll tell you how to go about this so you can see whether you're comfortable with the people of your own kind. Then I will have you talk with your opposites, and you'll see what the kind of tensions occur. I'd also like to say that friends usually are of the same type. They groove along, they get along fine. They're usually both extroverts or both thinking types, or they're both introverts and intuitives and whatnot. Spouses, however, are usually attracted to the opposite. And it is very important to realize that when you get married, you project onto this person this image you're carrying inside yourself. Jung called it the anima that the man carries within him, the feminine image. And he called the animus the masculine image that a man carries around. So when a man falls in love, he takes his anima and puts it on the woman, and everything's just wonderful until he starts pulling this projection back and suddenly sees, oh my goodness, this is just Sue from next door. It doesn't fit at all. Or else it fits and then they get engaged and get married, you see. Live happily ever after. It depends what happens when this projection is taken back. But it happens in every relationship. You project the anima or the animus onto the other person and think he or she is a million things that they are not. Then you begin to find out what they are and what they are not. And if the balance is okay and if it fits, you can work out a true relationship. And so when you're unhappily in love, you find the person isn't what you expected. It may be a blessing because you really could not work out a relationship, or else it's the start of a true relationship.
Does it work the opposite where you apply negative things to the person and then pull back and find that they're positive?
That happens with the shadow. There are certain people of your own sex where you project your own shadow, all the dark things. And if you ever listen to people gossiping, this is your clue. When you start gossiping, when you listen to gossip, you know that these are the things that they're putting on the other person, mostly, and that it's really inside yourself. The more irrational the judgments, the more likely the thing is a projection.
Is that always along sexual lines? Like, could I project my shadow onto a woman?
Yes, but that gets awfully complicated. Usually it's the same sex. But the women are usually involved with the erotic involvement, falling in love, and if in addition she has your shadow qualities, you're really in for deep trouble. Those are those ill-fated, terrible marriages. You're fascinated and you can't get away and you're bad for each other and so forth. That can be worked through, but then you have to pull back two projections. Now, so we don't get into a stereotype. The extrovert is not somebody, hail fellow, well met, not in the golf course and slapping everybody on the back or the successful film star or what have you. The extrovert is someone who is at home in the world and for whom the psychic, the inner things are odd. But how did I say it there? Fascinated and repelled by psychological things. They're much more happy out there in the world, either with mechanical things or working with people or doing things, and they know how to do things out there, and they're bewildered by and fascinated by the inner world. The introvert is not the loner, the scholar, necessarily. He may be very well at ease with people, but he starts from the inner life. He writes diaries, writes poetry, spends most of his time at home in his inner world, and then goes to the outer world, and the energy comes from within and goes out. So introversion means the energy comes from within and goes out. Extroversion means the energy starts out here and is taken in, which is different from the stereotype. Is that pretty clear? Another characteristic, the extrovert can go from one to the next. You go to a movie and to a this and to a that and can have 10 different things. It's very comfortable at Holden, doesn't get very rattled if you go from one thing to another. The introvert takes one experience, then has to have a relatively long period of time alone to process the experience within, you see, because that's where everything's happening. All of us need to do this, more or less. The bigger the experience, the more time you need for processing. And the grieving after a death is a form of processing the emotions. And I would urge all of you that when you have a death, to take a good portion of time for grief, to process it, regardless of extrovert or introvert. It's essential to process. But the introvert needs more time, takes more time, because he enjoys it more. The extrovert, it's kind of a waste of time, will spend a little time, change his clothes, sort of figuratively change his clothes, and go out to the next activity. So on the basis of this, I'd like to see a show of hands as to who thinks they're extroverts and who thinks they're introverts. There are no value judgments, you just made in different ways. Well, everybody has both. We're talking about predominantly. And I would like you to use what I wrote on the board as your guide. Where you feel more at home, and one of the key things would be, are you writers of journals or poetry or anything inner that you spend a lot of time on? Or are you doing things out there, whatever it is that you're doing? Let's have a try, because then I'd like you, all the extroverts, to talk to each other. And then if you don't feel comfortable, go over to the introvert side and talk to them. So for about, like in the Bible study. Okay, how many people think they're extroverts? Okay, that fits, yeah. Okay, so few? All right. Would they like to gather? Could you all gather on this side, okay? And the introverts on that side. And just have a dialogue about a few minutes as to what you like to do, your hobbies, the kinds of things you enjoy, hobbies. And when you find that you're not fitting, go to the other side if you feel more comfortable there. We've done this in a workshop with lots of fun. And you got a lot of insight. Talk about the things that you enjoy doing, the journal writing, the poetry writing, the books, sports. What's your name? I'll be taking about, there'll be about 5 minutes of talk here. You could have a little thing up there, maybe the three of you. Get some summary so that you can report back. You can come back into the main circle and continue the dialogue one little more time. Maybe 2 more minutes for each to come to its conclusion.
In the more active kind of situation. I don't think it really has anything to do with feeling not worthwhile or trying.
Right.
I came home from work. And I wanted to get my battery recharged. I wouldn't say, where should we go tonight? Yeah. Who should we call? Yeah. I was just the opposite. I was going to eat a little rest on the instead of going to
Jesus, we are having a little sessions on extroversion and introversion.
What sort of hobbies do you have? I mean, outside of your teaching? Yeah, that's sort of lonely sort of thing.
They're just about coming back.
Oh, yeah.
Where would you put yourself? Extroverted. Yeah, that's not the conversation so much as how much time you need between activities to process.
Did you get your stimulation from being in the city council?
Yeah.
Did you get your stimulation, your, did you get your energy renewed and recharged from being with...
Okay, psychic things kind of arrive, or are you at home in your own diaries and analysis? And go out into the world and come back and process what you've just experienced.
Yes, you find there's kind of a void in your life, not just the don't care.
Okay, shall we all come back into the large group? Unfortunately, we can't stay the small one the whole time.
Do you have other activities with people that...
Okay, do you want to all come back into the...
Maybe you're more an extrovert.
I want to talk a reading.
Yeah, you see. from what I've overheard, you were saying many things that I was very familiar with, like the time it takes to process, and you don't like large groups, and how at Holden there is so much to do, you have a hard time making choices. But I'd like to hear from you. if you had to make, if you had to make a little summary statement here in this group, who would like to? Could do it.
Okay. We one of the things that a couple of us queued into and everybody sort of agreed with was that at times we feel overloaded. If there's a lot of things going on, perhaps here or just anywhere in life, that bothers a lot of us, and we need time, as you said, to process. That was one thing. And that a lot of the activities that people do, whether it's keeping a journal, which several people did, diary, or maybe playing a musical piano, or taking a walk or anything, those activities seem to stem from that need to have a certain amount of time alone, a need to, again, process. And some of these large groups, a lot of people didn't really feel as comfortable with that. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of the characteristics that you...
Did you experience them pretty well? Okay. How about... this other group here. You also consider yourself introvert. Okay. Who is speaking up for you?
Well, some people in our group found they were renewed by being alone sewing or gardening or house building or reading.
Okay. And did you make any judgments about extroverts being shallow or superficial? No, you wouldn't admit to that. I love them, did it, because I myself, for all my love of people, I'm still an introvert. Keep journals, I'm always dreams, and take immense time to process this experience, as my husband well knows. But it's always fun to hear from you, and how, who would like to speak up from your group? No, come on. Paradoxically, the extrovert may not be quite as happy here because, after all, we're dealing with the psychic stuff.
No, we found we liked activities.
What did you say?
We found we liked activities that expressed ourselves more like having a numerous amount of tasks that we could switch to, because we didn't want to stay with one thing for fear of boredom.
Uh-huh. That's a good point, yeah. It gets bored faster, doesn't want to stay with one thing too long. That's a good another. Anything else from here? There must be more. Jim, I saw you talking. Come on.
Oh, the movie example is...
Well, give it to the others.
From respect to us, at least for watching our clean linen in public.
Well, how about sharing it with the other group over here?
Oh, it's just merely, we live at Hennepin and Lake, which is to me a wonderful blessing. Two movie houses that show golden oldies there. Double bills. I look forward to William Powell and The Thin Man, and Thin Man number two. Emily will go to the movie with me and just simply leave after the first movie. I've just seen two movies in a row. It just overloads her circuits.
I have a sister and I are very much alike, and she's been a secretary for a long time. I guess this expresses that her boss always says, you do the best work under pressure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Also, we found that we used it. I felt like we were discovering we were introverted, and a lot of our qualities were magnified, introverted qualities.
Uh-huh.
Like, I go jogging, but it's mainly because maybe I'm thinking about something and it helps me just to get away from my classroom situation and go jogging so I can think.
Yeah. What? Jogging is a beautiful example. We have a joke among our, I'm a psychotherapist, if not all else fails, tell them to go jogging. Because when you move your body in a rhythmic way, not only are you doing something for your body, but you can think and be free to come to some, you know, you have space. And you can think good thoughts. And especially when your body's moving rhythmically. Some of my best thoughts are when I'm swimming, and sometimes I'm swimming so much I bang my head against the end. Now, when you say, I think you said over here, you also felt that it had introverted qualities. Didn't you also feel that there were a lot of extroverted activities that you enjoyed? Nobody is all of one piece. But what I'm trying to stress now, you're more at home in one mode than in another. And now comes the important part. If you are predominantly introverted, your inferior quality, your unconscious, will have the extroverted mode in it, and it will be infantile, irrational, things that will get you into difficulty. I'll give you an example. If you're the kind of person who's very good at writing and being by yourself studying, and you have to do something that requires cooperation with people and quick adjustments and changes, and let's say, I don't know, driving on the freeway, for example, you might need more preparation to do it. You might have trained yourself to do it, but you wouldn't just hop in the car and go. You just need more time to go from one to the other. Whereas I know businessmen who will drive all day. They will still have lots of good thoughts while they're driving, but making this adjustment is just nothing. They can hop in the car just like this and go. This is a superficial example. A better example is, if you are a thinking type, your feelings will be undifferentiated and quite infantile and extroverted. You will cry in the movies, for example. This emotion that's coming at you from the outside will be so overwhelming. That's one other example. If you are extroverted, then your unconscious is more introverted and will be also irrational, but it will be fascinated by some far-out occult theory. You just don't know why you're so fascinated by it, because your whole mode of existence is more easy and out there. Jung was an introvert, thinking, intuitive. And these kind of people are the scholars who think up theories, can spend long hours studying, and evolving new theories. Now, it is characteristic of the introvert, of the intuitive. Now, we're talking about a quality, intuitive. To see hunches, to see new combinations, and to develop new theories if their thinking function is well developed, that's their strength. Their weakness, then, is dealing with the day-to-day, here and now practical. The practical person has trouble sometimes seeing the large picture. So you see the balance of opposites there. Am I going too fast? I've thought about this so often that I don't know if I'm explaining it, you know, the way you feel. Now, we have pretty well decided that most of us have predominantly one attitude, introverted or extroverted, and that each person, in addition, has a predisposition to be either logical and thinking, or more non-rational and intuitive, to take only two variables. That's one side. Or they're feeling and practical sensation. The feeling person is not somebody who's very emotional. In fact, their emotions are under very good control. A feeling type makes value judgments and knows what is good, can help make people feel at ease, can be the good hostess at all times, be the good steward, in a way. I mean, always knowing when to do the right thing. and to make the right value judgment, to express feelings, to honor the feelings of the other person, not to step on anybody's feelings, and to evoke a warm, pleasant atmosphere. That just seems to be a gift. If this feeling person is confronted with a situation that calls for hard logical thinking, according to Jung's theory, it is an effort to think a situation through. They would rather say, this is nice, this is good, this is fine, let's do this because it makes us feel good, and not to analyze the situation logically, not to go and think it through. And the thinking person, in turn, will say, I have to think about it first, I have to think it through, A to Z, and then I will make a judgment. So here we have two opposites again, the thinking and the feeling. Have I left you all in the dark? I'd like some questions. I don't know where.
The thinking and feeling, now, where are you with that? Are you with the extrovert or introvert?
Yeah, both. Now, it doesn't matter whether you're extrovert or introvert. Extrovert and introvert is your attitude to the world. The thinking and feeling is what happens inside yourself. It's, you can be an, okay, we can be an extroverted thinking, we can be an introverted thinking. And you can be an extroverted feeling, and you can be an introverted feeling. Okay?
If I understand what you're saying, it's probably on a continuum type thing where, you know,
yes,
person, thinking person. Would you say the people that feel the most uncomfortable or the least uncomfortable would be the ones that are closer to 50-50 on a continuum?
All right. I would say this, that predominantly you veer towards one attitude, extroversion or introversion, but that you're comfortable when you are with like-minded people rather than if you're in the middle. But that you can have both attitudes at different times. For example, as a young person, even as an introvert, you're more extroverted because you have to deal with the world. As an older person, it is your duty to turn inward because this is where your reality is. So that it's like the earth moving back and forth towards the sun. In youth, people are extroverted. In old age, they are more introverted to prepare themselves for the end. The other aspect is that regardless of whether you're extroverted or introverted, you have another predisposition to be very rational thinking or feeling, or very irrational, and our culture does not like non-rational behavior, so it's not rewarded in our culture. But there are people who are very intuitive, who are all over the place, start 20 different things. I think we talked about this in a different session. Start 10 different things and never really finish anything. That's typical of the intuitive. But they see the big picture, they have hunches. When you think of making a trip, for example, they will say, well, we'll just hop in the car and go. We'll find our way. And the other, the more practical, logical one, we'll have the map. Haven't you had that difference?
No, yeah.
Now, let's see, make a right turn at Spruce and a left turn at Durant, you see. And would not dare, there's another difference we have. There, just trust to intuition that if you go right and left, you'll get there, you see. Now, it's a little dangerous, it's a little risky. So the intuitive tends to go by hunches, take risks, and go too fast sometimes, but just trust the intuition. The thinking type goes more logically, step by step, and certainly the practical person goes step by step. And I think the two need to work together, and that's why it's very nice when you have a spouse who has the other qualities, you see. Compliment each other. Yeah.
What about the person that doesn't want to go the same way twice?
All right. What would you say on that?
What would I say? I don't like to go the same way. Right. I want to go new ways. No.
Okay, two things. We said the extrovert is easily bored, so probably extrovert, and probably intuitive. He likes to explore new avenues, by and large. the introvert might be safer going the same way because he can think his own thoughts. You know, you don't have to pay attention to street signs. Does that check out with people? And you've got your way, and you just go, just like you said with the jogging. You know, you get into the rhythm of it, and then you can start thinking.
Do most little children want to go the same way?
Yes.
I don't know. That's a different thing. Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like these different qualities are at war within me, or I'm one thing one time. One time I'll just want to take off intuitively. The next time I have to know exactly where on that map I'm going, or I get really bugged.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm impossible to live with, because if I were one or the other, you know, someone could deal with me. But
yeah.
I really do swings from one extreme really? To the other.
Well. You see, you haven't found yet which is really you. And that is so true of young people many times, that they have to try out many different modes of adjustment, like the intuitive versus the thinking and logical one. And as you go through life, you will strengthen one and lessen the other, but they will always be at war. That's the very nature of the opposites. And then, as I said before, the very tension of opposites, and I'm going to talk about that tomorrow a great deal, about how the opposites help us find a solution. The conflict and the tension of the opposites is the field from which the solution comes, whether it's in the conscious life or in dreams, especially in dreams. So,
when you said the real you think there is a real you, and is it changeable? I mean, in exploring this, is it not only to avoid conflicts, but perhaps to change something about yourself that you might want to?
Mm-hmm. Well, when we talk, you asked if the real you would be what he calls the self, and the self is more than the conscious ego, and the ego is the brain and the way it works in the outer world. The self encompasses what we call in religion the soul, and in Jungian terms the collective unconscious, and that is quite different from the ego. And yes, it evolves all through life, and its aim is wholeness and integration. And all through life you have new experiences that you gather together to make, to integrate into larger and larger wholes, to become more and more what we call mature, able to recognize your inner self as well as deal with the world. So you need both qualities.
But the real self implies individual self, not collective.
Quite unique. Self. You remember when Ruth, were you here when Ruth said the uniqueness of the thumbprints? We're all so unique, and our individuality is as unique as our thumbprints. There are no two alike. But to know what it is and to recognize it and to help it grow through life is your task.
Yes. It sounds kind of deterministic, though, like it's there and you learn about it, but it's inevitable. It comes out and you're inevitably intuitive, introverted.
Very good point. Jung has been criticized for that aspect, and so are all people who make types, who put people into categories. The uniqueness and the dynamic aspect of living is such that you never stay just fixed. Understanding could be avoided if we recognize that there are people who are predominantly. However, in his work with many, many people and in his theories, he felt that much misunderstanding could be avoided if we recognize that there are people who are predominantly rational, predominantly non-rational, predominantly introverted or predominantly extroverted. It helps avoid the conflict, the value judgment. You see?
Now, if you think of most behaviors being learned behaviors that we're not born with, mm-hmm. knowledge or whatever, and the idea of learned behaviors, you learn something because you reinforce for it, so you do it again, you learn it better, and you do it again. If that's against your nature, if you're perhaps, you know, it's more your own nature to be one way or the other, and you're constantly getting reinforced for the opposite way, it must create
Yes.
Enormous amount of conflict.
There is, yes. There is in our culture a tendency to reward the extrovert and to look askance at the introvert. And I think Holden is a place where introverts feel more at home despite the many activities. But I'm just using Holden as an example. But if you are thrust into too much activity by too early, especially as you're growing up, you may never find your be comfortable with yourself, and you end up having too much conflict and tension, which then often means that you have to seek counseling or something to find who you really are. But the reverse is true as well, that if you have a child whose predisposition is to be active, and well, active is the wrong word, it's not synonymous with extroversion. An extroverted child, and you yourself are an introvert, and you're studying in your study, and this child wants to do many activities, you say, now be quiet, you're dampening this enthusiasm. And many teachers do this to, in art studies, they dampen the creativity because they themselves have a different outlook. But the main purpose of this is not to make value judgments of the personality bent of one or the other, but to recognize that we're uniquely created and predominantly uncomfortable in one attitude or another, and to sort of become aware of which way you're going.
What makes me is trying to do many things at the same time and not finish them in order.
Well,
that's,
I think
that's
one
of my faults.
Uh-huh. Well, it could be a fault, or maybe that's the way you are. Maybe you're able to have a lot of loose ends around, and it's kind of a challenge. You see,
oh,
the intuitive. All right,
time.
The intuitive can do this. The practical sensation type has to take each one and finish it. Take the recipe. How do you cook? Do you just go, or do you go by the recipe?
Yes, I do.
Well, I see you both as you. Go ahead.
As you're going through life, do you tend to perfect the one trait that you dominate, so that, like, I've taken the Myers-Briggs several times.
Oh, you have? All right.
And out in the two middle categories, I'll come out XX every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
So, as I get older, will I tend to start not doing that and you know, pick one trait that's more me and then, you know, build on that? Or...
Well, let me, okay, first let's explain to everybody else what the Myers-Briggs test is. It's a test devised to find out, by Myers and Briggs, to find out what type you are. And the questions are pretty good. We have wondered if they were not biased by the test maker, but that's another problem. The Myers-Briggs test is a way of finding out if you are what? Introverted, extroverted, and if you are intuitive, or sensation, or thinking, or feeling. How did you come out again? I forget.
I've come out ESFJ. I think that's
okay. Okay.
Down, but
just a minute.
XX.
All right. Well, just a minute. What's the XX?
Well, I mean, right on the line.
Oh, I see.
Right
borderline. Yeah. All right. To answer your question, yes, you will develop your strengths. You said E for extroversion, and then S for sensation.
Well, I several times I've come up XX.
Oh, I see.
And then I think another time it's been E,
mm-hmm.
S,
okay.
FJ.
All right. Well, ESFJ would be extroverted feeling, an extroverted sensation feeling. Because ESF, extroverted sensation feeling, sensation being the practical. Now, this would mean that as you grow older, yes, you will become, you will probably deepen your strength, your practical and feeling tendencies, your good judgment, and your weakness then would be where? The intuitive would be in the unconscious. See?
But as you get older, that's confusing to me.
Yes, it is.
Do you build on your inferior side,
all right,
so that you're learning more from that, or do you tend to just get your ways and...
Well, that's a free choice. I think that it's nice and pleasant to stay in your strengths and to deepen your what you do well already. But when you go for any kind of counseling or if you go into analysis, the task of analysis is to bring up your weakness, to bring up your inferior function, to help you to recognize what it is that you can't do well, and to sort of sharpen that and make you more aware and comfortable with that side which you're not comfortable with in the ordinary way.
When you come out right in the middle, though, how do you know which is your inferior nature?
I don't know. We'd have to talk about this afterwards. Yeah. Well, you really know what I'm talking about, see, and I'm afraid we're leaving everyone else behind, so. But I'll talk to you about it a little later. I really don't know how we know, it's just a growth. Now, something about the unconscious and, I said that before, it's always beaming messages, and that's why we listen to dreams. And they're always trying to tell, it's always trying to tell you something. It's also compensating when you are too far out one way or the other. And when you are able to take time out alone and process your experience, you're working through the psychic energy so that you don't have loose ends. If you're able to tolerate many loose ends and go from one thing to another, you're operating on a different level and you process it through activity on the outside. In all cases, energy must be worked through. It's the same laws in physics, basically. And if you keep in mind that the psyche is self-healing given half a chance, that it has a wisdom, that dreams will give you wisdom and guide to do that which you're neglecting. And I've experienced this over 20 years in my own analysis, and I've seen it in my own clients, that it's quite uncanny and therefore sometimes scary to see how we get just the right message, sometimes in very disguised and garbled forms, but it is definitely a guide for our life. And that's why I say to you, get your little notebooks, take a little time in the morning, try to train yourself to listen to your dreams, because it'll be worthwhile. Have you had any while you're here?
Dreams?
Mm-hmm.
No, and the people at the session said that meant I was... What does that mean when you think you don't have dreams?
Well, it's just that you're not remembering them. You still have them.
Right. Yeah, yeah. That's right. They characterize me that some of these students did.
Oh, I can't know.
No, I was such a sound sleeper. I don't like dreams.
To show you the feedback I got the other day, somebody on the staff said they dreamt that they were keeping track of their dreams in their dream. So, I was also told that the bookstore is all out of these little notepads. Well, I'd like to sum up, have a little summary statement, the way Mark always does. But first, if there are any more questions, we still have 10 minutes till supper time. Do you all want to go to...
Coming to Holden Village is quite an experience. I was wondering how the young people react to the food and how the old people react to the food.
Okay, do you want to throw that open for a little while? How do you react to the food?
I don't know.
I take it that it's not what you're used to eating.
Yeah, the old gray mare ain't what she used to what. But sometimes there are some I like, sometimes I don't, some I don't like. But it's usually queer.
Uh-huh. Well, how about some of the young people here? Does anybody want to say how do they like
it? I enjoy it.
Yeah, I think it's just about.
I think it depends on how young. Our kids are younger than these young people, uh-huh. And they think it's queer too.
Hey, that reminds me of what John Schramm said, where they were fighting the grandparents and the sons and the fathers in the middle.
Yeah.
There must be. Yeah.
I would like to ask you a question about certain emotions, or I don't know if guilt is even an emotion, or whatever it is. Do any of these types tend to be more sensitive, or does that develop more in types, or is that just irrelevant to type and function of something else?
No, that's a good question. I think the introvert being closer to the unconscious is more sensitive to the unconscious and to what goes on there, and part of what goes on there are the emotions. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they exaggerate the impact of the emotions. In fact, I think that's why they need more time to process. It's not that extroverts in general feel less at all. It's just that their threshold is more out, and they have a stronger barrier to the unconscious, and therefore may not be so in contact or in tune with it.
This is more of a background question. Is Jung, Jung assuming that every personality trait is there in each person's potential, like thinking, feeling bit, and then some you get
yeah.
to the conscious, and the other is dropped back to the subconscious?
Sort of like a flower. Part of the seed becomes root, part of it becomes stem, part of it becomes flower. And if you take this four-partite division, for some people grow into thinking types with sensation and intuition as the leaves and feeling as a root. Maybe that's a good example. Yeah. But it's not fixed, you see what I mean? It's not totally unchangeable. You can strengthen one leaf or the other leaf, or you can take nourishment from your roots, you see what I mean? It all works together. But in terms of what function will be the blossom, it's pretty well, he feels is pretty well predisposed, just as your red, your blonde hair or somebody else's red hair.
But it is there. The different traits are there within the person.
Yeah, according to Jung, they are. And tomorrow I'll talk some more about some more aspects of the same thing, only more opposites and dreams and dream symbols. Oh, it'll be Friday, pardon me.
How,
yes.
How young can, do you think you can identify the types?
I don't know. I don't think you could till adolescence, till the person is pretty well formed. Though some people feel that babies, of course babies show definite temperamental characters, but temperament is a little different from personality. I think they have to be able to already be verbal. But that's not a definitive answer. Did you have a question?
What does being introspective or not, how does that relate to being extrovert or introvert? It would seem to me that the introverted person would be more introspective perhaps than the extroverted person. But you mentioned that young people, whether or not they're pre-sleep one time or the other, may manifest more extroverted characteristics. Yet I think young people tend to be more introspective, and that older people tend to be less introspective, though you were saying that they should perhaps be more introspective than they are as they go through the last
right.
half of life.
Right.
So
good point. Well, introspection and introversion are not synonymous, but
no.
they are very similar. Every one of us should be introspective. We should all look inside to see what's happening. But we cannot really, we should not overdo it. And the other part is that young people must take a lot of energy and put it out there to solve the real problems, and then they become introspective as a balance, you see. So, yeah.
I'm going back to this earlier question. Where we have the thinking and the intuitive and the feeling. Do you think it's important for a person who is concerned about fully developing their potential, when we talk about wholeness,
mm-hmm.
to try and, if you are a thinker, to work very hard on developing the feeling so that you become, I don't know if I say a more complete person, but you can better appreciate what's going on in life? And would you encourage those kinds of things to work on the area where you are naturally weak or it's,
I think that would be the task of the second half of life. I think in the first half you should sharpen what your strengths are, and in the second half work on your inferior or weaker parts and bring those up to where you can differentiate them more. And wholeness implies that you can develop most parts of your personality. But I think give yourself more time. I mean, not you specifically, in general. Do this in the second half of life. because you know what your strengths are by then. Yeah.
Would you connect that with the idea of a midlife crisis or whatever, that just you start feeling that kind of questioning, where if you have been, like you say, looking at strengths, that you just you feel that there's something that you want to do that's different, you're going through that transition?
I think that connects very well. People, midlife crisis, isn't that when you suddenly say, well, golly, I only have so much time, I really want to try something else, something totally different. Some people start a new career, don't they? Now that the lifespan is longer and we have more chances to develop more things, that probably is true, that at that point we need to look inside and often pull up the neglected function. You see, we also have a third function that's often neglected, that's not unconscious at all. We just sort of neglect. Sometimes I use the image of a rudder or two wings, and if we use only one wing, the other one will atrophy. So in midlife we should start using the other one.